Very good morning, all. It is Wednesday, April 17, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. Good morning, wherever and however you're listening. Yes, 100 days until the Olympic Games in Paris. And we'll speak to diver Sam Fricker later this morning, ahead of the Paris Games and off the quick backup from commentating the A-League last night. And a thrilling game it was as well. Between Western United and Adelaide United. And it ended up being a 3-3 draw off the quick backup from the booth into the studio here. Phil Moss, good morning, Mossy. How
morning,
are you?
Good morning, Mido. Yeah, very good. The downside of a 6-goal thriller is your voice is a bit dusty the next morning. But no, it was a good game. And I think it may have done and dusted Adelaide's chances of making the finals, and Western's still in the fight to avoid the wooden spoon.
And with, obviously, Pup and Loz away, we've got Adam Pengilly off the bench as well again. How are you, Adam?
Morning, Mido. Morning, Mossy. Morning, everyone. Yeah, I'm going well, Mido. Looking forward to another big week of sport. I had a bit of controversy on the way into work this morning. I stopped to fill up for a bit of petrol at the petrol station about 10 to 5 this morning, and another car sort of pulled up next to me and he put his petrol in. He actually walked in and paid before me, then left. And then all of a sudden, the guy's charging me petrol for $80. I'm like, hang on a minute, mate. That wasn't me. I only put in about $35 worth of petrol. So I had to stand my ground. I did the right thing, didn't I? I stood my ground.
Oh, without a doubt.
Absolutely. Said, no. He goes, the other bloke told me that was his pump. I said, no, mate.
Dodgy. Really?
So he was off and gone by the time I was there paying. So the poor old petrol attendant, he's lost about $35-40 this
was
morning.
Was he on the other side of you?
He was on the other side of me.
So he's just had a punt that you've put in less than him.
Well, I don't know. He told the guy, he said, no, that's fine. And then I've gone up and said, no, mate, no. I didn't put in $80 worth of petrol. It was just me.
$35-40 bloke's just stuffed up.
He has.
You were on the other pump. Hasn't even asked or hasn't even bothered to look. Just gone, oh, yeah, he's at that one.
Am I not a good Samaritan, though, for offering to pay? Or have I done the right thing there? I'm a bit concerned.
No, I think you've done the right thing. Absolutely. He's fallen asleep at the cash register as well, because I usually walk in and they tell me what pump I was at.
Yeah.
They know.
But it's 10 to 5 in the morning. There's two cars there. It's not as if you try to scan for 10 cars.
No, he's got a lift.
More importantly, what sort of car do you drive for $35 tank?
No.
I want one of them.
Petrol. It wasn't a full tank, Mossy. Petrol's a bit expensive this morning. I thought I'll just get enough to get me through the next couple of days and I'll wait till the price goes down.
Wait for payday as well. Yeah. Well, plenty to talk about today. We had Origin, the series, launched yesterday. I think we're about 50 days out from game one. All the teams out for this weekend in the NRL as well. We've got Champions League on this morning as well. Rory McIlroy, there was a report he'd been offered $850 million. I'm guessing that's US and an equity stake to go to live. He shut that down as well and voiced his loyalty to the PGA Tour. We've got LIV Golf coming here next week, which we're going to be at as well. And you'll be there again, Adam. And really looking forward to seeing the caravan, the very luxurious caravan, come back to Australia.
It's a circus, Mido. Don't worry about that. It's a circus. There'll be... can I just say, plenty of frivolity and revelry in the crowd next week. It'll be a big few days.
Rory's never going to live. There's no way he could.
He can't, Mido. He's
no way.
He's softened his stance, no doubt, and he's been quite vocal about that in the last couple of months. But there's one thing to soften your stance. There's another thing to take the cash and jump across to the other side. He's gone too far down that road. It's not going to happen. I know there were reports that came out in the last 24 hours saying, what was it, quote unquote, a deal is close. I don't think that's ever right. I'd be like absolutely stunned if he ever jumps across to leave. I just can't see it happening.
Won't be happening. No, not at all. And Zach Lomax, it was confirmed yesterday that Parramatta have their man, that he's heading to the Eels on a 4-year deal from 2025. And if the reported numbers are accurate, he'll be on, what, an average of about $675,000 a year. Fair way less than what he's on at the moment, isn't it?
It is. And I think that's probably a fair enough price for Zach, isn't it? Really, at the moment. The one issue with the Dragons is not what he's displaying on the field. He's playing some really good football. It's just the amount of money he had in his contract at the back end of that deal. Like, he's on... You know, he's on $850,000 next year, Mido. He was due to get $850 next year and then $875 the year after that.
That's really wanting out.
Like, well, he's allowed to do that, obviously. The Dragons are going to free up all this salary cap space now. Shane Flanagan and the Dragons are going to be really aggressive in the market with that money available and then go out and try and target whoever they want to get. And obviously they're making a play for Sunia Taruva from Penrith. I think it's a really smart option. Not sure if they'll get him, but they're definitely going down that path and just freeing up that money. And Zach's probably going to be happy at the Eels.
When you say not sure they'll get him, what do you think Taruva will do? Because he's going to be too offered. Even Ivan Cleary, in his comments, yeah, conceded that it's going to be hard to keep him.
Oh, his preference, I don't think without any doubt, is to stay at Penrith. But he's not going to get anywhere near the money to stay at Penrith than what he'll get offered elsewhere. And that's just a reality of the situation. Penrith got a couple of really good young brothers coming through the system in Jesse and Casey McLean, who are ready, almost getting ready to play NRL regularly on a regular basis. And if Penrith re-sign Taruva, that's virtually their back five locked in for the next 3 or 4 years, and those other guys are going to have to go find other places to go. So Penrith want to keep Taruva, but just at the right price. And whether they're going to have the money to match the Dragons or the Knights or someone else who's involved, I highly, highly doubt it. It'll come down to a decision about where he wants to play.
What a shock. Penrith have more players coming through to fill the void. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's scary, Mido.
Oh. Mossy, we've got Champions League on at the moment and two huge mornings of it. Champions League quarterfinals, second legs. And I guess the games probably of most interest to us are tomorrow, but Barcelona, PSG today. And the first leg result was 3-2 to Barca in Paris. And here we are, 1-1 in the second leg. But Barcelona have had a player sent off. And of course, PSG have never won the Champions League and Mbappe's leaving.
That's right. And it's the one title that they really, really want so badly, obviously. But Araujo got sent off in the 29th minute for Barcelona. They were 1-0 up. And Ousmane Dembele has just equalised for PSG. So it's 1-1, which means Barcelona 4-3 on aggregate as it stands. This is the second leg of two legs. So the winner this morning goes through. So it's very, very evenly poised.
I'm right, aren't they? They've never won it, I don't think, have they, PSG? Don't think they have.
Not in my time.
Don't worry. I'll get corrected either. Soon if they have, but don't think so. And the other tie this morning, Borussia Dortmund, a 2-0 up against Atletico Madrid. And Atletico won the first leg 2-1, so that could be headed for a thriller as well. But Arsenal in action tomorrow morning against Bayern Munich.
Away.
Bayern, they'll be desperate for a trophy after having conceded the Bundesliga to Bayer Leverkusen and Man City up against Real Madrid. So that's all to come. Bit of Origin with the series launch yesterday at the MCG, which will be the venue for Game 2 this year. Time will trill. Rabbitohs superstar is no guarantee for Origin. The back page of the Courier Mail, the Queensland perspective, number one up for grabs. Maroons coach declares Walsh ready to reach new heights as fight with Ponga for fullback spot begins. So Michael Maguire saying they're 40 or 50 that could be in the mix for Game 1 selection for New South Wales. Spoke a lot about character. On Latrell Mitchell, Madge said everyone knows his capabilities, but it's about making sure he's in the right headspace. What did you take from Madge's comments yesterday, Adam?
You can't pick Latrell Mitchell right now, Mido, can you?
No way.
On current form, what we've seen so far, he's sitting out for suspension for a few weeks at the moment. You just can't pick him. Like, it's as simple as that.
Too many players ahead of him
at
the moment.
Of course. Now, if he comes back and plays awesome footy in the next 3 or 4 weeks before Origin, then it's a different conversation. But as it stands right now, he's not in the conversation for me. Yeah, Madge is trying to keep the guys on their toes, aren't he? By saying 40 or 50 players, like, he'd have a pretty good idea about where he's going with his team after 6 rounds of the competition. He'll probably want to refine maybe 3 or 4 spots potentially, but he's just trying to keep everyone on their toes, I'd imagine. So I think the more interesting conversation, Mido, about Origin at the moment is, can Billy Slater fit Kalyn Ponga and Reece Walsh in the one team?
Just has to.
Does he have to?
Yes. But I think one of the players sacrificed, it could be one of those hookers.
What do you think,
but
Ben Hunt will be sacrificed?
Well, how unlucky would that be?
He's
but
been,
you play Ponga off the bench, probably.
Yeah.
Probably his best spot. Give him that roaming role.
Geez, I think that'd be harsh on Ben Hunt. He's been
so harsh.
He's been one of their best players for a number of years now, probably 4 or 5 years, Queensland.
Never has a bad game.
Never has a bad game at Origin level. He's been fantastic for them for so many years, but it's a pretty compelling case to have, say, Kalyn Ponga on the bench coming on at some stage and running at tired forwards in the middle of the park.
I was going to ask, is your question, Ads, can you have them in the same team or the squad?
Team, same team.
On the pitch at the same time?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, how can you not? Like, when you've got two players, two game breakers like that, it's like, how do you justify leaving one of them out?
You might be right, Mido. They might say to Harry Grant, saying, mate, you're playing 80 minutes, that's hooker now in Origin. I know it's tough and it's a big ask, but I think he's capable of doing it. And that gives them the flexibility to play Kalyn Ponga on the bench. And if I'm Michael Maguire, that's a nightmare.
Yeah. I saw Murray Taulagi. He's got a hamstring injury. He's obviously an incumbent winger, isn't
he?
And Hamiso's got a hamstring injury. So they're going to be, like, you know, circumstances could create a different spot for Kalyn anyway.
Mm.
I think we're all assuming that Reece Walsh will hold the number one jersey.
I think so.
All being equal, no injuries, et cetera, suspensions. But it's just where you put Ponga. Put it this way, as a New South Wales fan, will you be delighted if Kalyn Ponga is not in the 17? I know I will be.
Well, on the flip side,
we've missed a trick there.
On the flip side, New South Wales has got a player that has never played Origin level before who could do something similar in Ryan Papenhuyzen.
That's a good point.
Is there a chance that Madge is looking at playing Ryan Papenhuyzen off the bench and injecting him into the game in a similar situation to what maybe Ponga would get into the game? I don't know. It's just a question. Just a question. Mm-hmm. Fight fire with fire, eh?
Because it's amazing since obviously they went the dual hooking situation at Queensland, New South Wales have obviously done the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's been successful in Origin, hasn't it, really?
Mm.
It's been the way to go considering, you know, the obviously just the intensity of Origin and, you know, the what we're asking hookers to play 80 minutes in that environment is really difficult.
Mm.
So it's a good problem to have.
It's just this time of year we start talking about Origin teams, isn't it? Sort of round six, round seven, we start getting a little bit serious about Origin teams. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, plenty of debate to happen, Mido.
And back page of your publication, the City Morning Herald, we've had the chat, and that's in relation to Zach Lomax. So, off to Parramatta, of course, as we mentioned before. But is he playing himself into the wing position for New South Wales, where he doesn't really want to play, at least at club level? You play anywhere, obviously, at rep level. But interestingly, he's back at the centres this week as well for the Dragons.
I think he's got to be a chance, Mido. Like, you would have to say that Brian To'o's probably got one spot nailed on at the moment, pending fitness, obviously, and no injuries. The other spot, I'd imagine at the moment, is probably a race between, you'd say, Josh Adokar and Zach Lomax. Look, the two leading contenders. Now, Josh Adokar probably gives you something that Zach Lomax doesn't, and that's just raw speed. But there's a lot of other characteristics about Zach Lomax that can probably tip him into contention. You would have thought he's clearly, his aerial ability is almost second to none in the NRL. Like, under the high ball and attacking those high balls, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
And coming out of his own end, you'd imagine he's probably going to make more yardage than Josh Adokar as well. So I said it at the start of the year, Mido, when there was all this debate about Zach Lomax. I'm saying if he plays well on the wing for the Dragons, he is a chance for Origin. And I stand by that.
At the moment, I'd prefer Lomax on the wing.
Okay.
Mm.
Over Adokar still?
Yeah. At the moment, like you say, it's just getting out of trouble, as you know, such a big factor in Origin. Just the bigger body and, you know, his threat, obviously, with his height. He's great under the high ball as well.
With a kicker like Nathan Cleary as well kicking for him, that's a real positive.
That's a weapon.
Yeah.
Potentially. Just like Sonny Bill, legend praises rugby-bound Manu, also on the back page of the Herald today. So yesterday, the Roosters put out a statement confirming that Joey Manu's off to Japanese rugby at the end of the season. And former All Blacks coach, who's quoted in this article, Steve Hansen, he's performance director at the club, he's going to. Ian Foster, another former All Blacks coach, more recent one, is the coach of that Japanese club. And, Joey Manu. It's interesting, though, because I was thinking yesterday, well, he's obviously wants to play for the All Blacks, but he eventually has to be in the Super Rugby system with New Zealand to play for the All Blacks. So,
is that right? Do they have to play Super Rugby, do they?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see how Joey Manu attacks this. Does he have like a season or two? I think he signed for two seasons.
Yeah.
in Japanese rugby, but eventually, I'm sure he's in his own mind is penciling the 2027 World Cup here in Australia, and whether he ends up back over there before then, because I know a lot of people think he's just going to go back to the Roosters. I'll be surprised if Joe Manu doesn't go to rugby and at some stage isn't trying to push for the All Blacks.
Oh, absolutely. Like with the Rugby World Cup 3 years away now, is it, Mido? Is that right? 2027?
Yeah.
That gives him probably a pretty good grounding to learn the game and get up to speed for a couple of years, maybe come back for one Super Rugby season back here and then get ready for the World Cup. Mm. He's certainly talented enough to play in a World Cup. And then, who knows, we'll be back at the Roosters.
Can I change tack just very quickly? Ads.
Mm.
Ricky and Desi. So if Desi has been found to be on this planet by the NRL review, does Ricky Stewart owe him an apology for smashing him publicly?
Oh, I'd love to be there when the apology is given.
Through gritted. No, I don't think so, Mossy. I think Ricky was just speaking his mind. And I think the Titans probably got away with a fair bit in that game on Sunday night, to be honest. Probably so did Canberra. But listen, every coach pushes the envelope in terms of tactics and slowing down the ruck. And to me, I saw that press conference on Sunday night and I just thought, you know what? That is just classic Des Hasler. His team just lost their fifth straight game to start the year, albeit it was a very much a much improved performance against Canberra on Sunday night. But they're under the pump big time, Mossy, and this is just classic Desi.
Mm.
Deflection, throw off, let's put the spotlight on something else, and I'll worry about getting my team ready for what is a huge game this week against his old club, Manly. The first time he's come up against Manly since he left in pretty acrimonious circumstances. And what's happened for the first two or three days of the week? Everyone's talking about the referees.
Mm.
That's Des.
Yep.
So true.
Yeah, it was quite personal, though, what Ricky said.
It was. But you know, the reports are that Des told him after his own press conference and before Ricky went in and said, listen, I've had a crack about the refereeing and the penalty count, whatever else. And you can imagine what that would have been to Ricky Stewart. The red mist would have descended and he walked in there and gave it to him with both barrels.
Was that a ploy from Desi? To go and tell him, to fire him up.
Maybe. But I think, like, to be fair, to just
stoke the fire. Well,
to be fair, Mossy, they've known each other for many years. They're former teammates. I think they do retain some sort of pretty good relationship. So I think Des would have done that out of respect.
Yeah.
Just some of your say. Naturally, a lot of it's on the Origin selections. Lomax will not be picked for Origin. Still needs more time on the wing for me, says Bob from Bowral. But you can't leave Dylan Edwards out. He's played for Australia on the wing, says Wise out. Joseph Swalee is a better right winger for New South Wales than Addo Carr or Lomax, says Bondi Jack. What's wrong with Crichton? Stephen Crichton has one wing spot, asks Anthony as well. Keaton and Cummy will come back to this. 0419 767 272. How are you, Dick?
Well, it's a good time, boys. Good time in sports. I mean, we were 4, right to the Masters, right to the NBA play.
Mate, we're going to try and re-establish your light. It's a bit of a dodgy one, but they've got the NFL draft just over a week away. The ratings for that will be absolutely through the roof. They had the WNBA draft yesterday. Naturally, Caitlin Clark went number one to the Indiana Fever. I don't think you can get any sort of merchandise related to her at all at the moment. It just all sold out straight away. We'll get the Masters fallout from Dick as well. And naturally, preview the playoffs in the NBA. We got the play-in games this morning. And that's 9 o'clock. There's one at 9:30, I'm pretty sure, today. Our time for the NBA play-in games. Yes, the Lakers and the Pelicans at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. And then at midday, it is the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings. So we'll get all Dick's thoughts on everything going on there when we get him back shortly. I think we got him. Dick, sorry, mate. We just had a dodgy line there. We got you back. We got you there, Dick?
Yeah, I got you.
Beautiful. Sorry, mate. We've got the line going good now. So, yeah, great time.
Good.
Obviously, in sport over there in the States. And firstly, let's start with the Masters fallout. Scotty Scheffler, the market had him short, and he delivered for those who took the short odds. What did you make of the Masters, and what sort of has come out in the aftermath?
I think the only surprise, guys, was that it took Scotty Scheffler until the last nine to pull away. I was making mention on on Thursday on my radio show after the first round was done, and Scotty was right there along with Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, you saw those two and you said, okay, which one of these two is going to be able to last 4 days? And not one person out of 100 golf fans would say Bryson DeChambeau is going to be the guy that lasts 4 days and Scotty Scheffler is going to be the one that doesn't. I mean, it was a highly predictable outcome to the tournament based upon what happened after day one. And all I wanted to see was Scotty just be somewhere in contention and watch some of his putts fall. Because if some of Scotty Scheffler's putts fall, he cannot be matched in this on this planet. And we talked a month or two ago about how Scotty was Tiger-esque in his ball striking. And the only thing he needs to do is putt reasonably well, and he can't be touched in these tournaments. And now, the heritage is another story because he's about to have a baby, and I don't think he's going to focus very much if he's going to play at all this week. But as far as the Masters goes, that was Scotty's from beginning to end, and he truly showed that he is the greatest golfer on the planet since Tiger Woods. I think he has proved that he's the greatest golfer on the planet since prime Tiger Woods.
Dick, from an Australian point of view, Cameron Smith. He always seems to play well at Augusta. I think he's his sixth top 10 in the Masters since he started playing there. But, geez, I tell you what, it's that green jacket's proving more and more elusive year by year for him.
It is, but he's always there. And it's so funny because when you guys asked me about, you kind of caught me off guard with the low Aussie, and I just kind of defaulted to Adam Scott and Jason Day. And yet, we've been talking about Cam Smith at Augusta for years and years and years. And as soon as I hung up the phone with you guys last week, I was like, why didn't I say anything about Cam Smith? I always love Cam Smith at Augusta. And so I was kicking myself all week long for that. But certainly he did a marvelous job as always. He's got the chops to win one of these days. Will he be able to continue to play on LIV year after year after year and not face a lot of the best competition in the world and still be primed to win a Masters? I don't think it helps him to be on LIV, I'll tell you that. I think it definitely hurts his chances to win on the at the Masters. But how about the other Cam guys? And a guy that is live for this week at the Heritage, Cam Davis plays very well at the Heritage. He played surprisingly well at the Masters this week. I did not anticipate such a high finish for Cam. I believe he was 12th. But he's a guy I really like at Hilton Head today this week.
And Dick, Caitlin Clark gets first pick in the WNBA draft. Where's she off to?
She's off to Indiana, guys. And the absolute buzz surrounding her is not just in Indiana, where they have basically sold out the season. They have sold out their arena for the season. It's a full-size NBA arena, 18,000. But she is selling out arenas across the country. So, like, for example, the Storm season tickets or single game tickets went on sale yesterday. The Storm sold out the lower bowl and they had to open up the upper bowl for the two Indiana games with Caitlin Clark. And I would imagine we'll have, for a Caitlin Clark road game, we'll have 14 or 15,000 fans for both of those games here in Seattle. It's amazing.
Incredible. Okay, ahead of the Olympic Games, I see the Team USA roster is being finalized for the Paris Games. Gee. LeBron, Steph, KD, Embiid. It looks like the big guns are all going to go.
Big guns are going to give it a go, but it kind of looks like a 2016 roster, doesn't it? Instead of a 2024 roster. I mean, the first thing I thought was, wow, all the big guns are going to be there. But then the second thing I thought is, man, that's an old basketball team in large part. And there's not a lot of post play. And you know these teams around the world love their bigs and love their back-to-the-basket game. And really, Joel Embiid's the only true center that this basketball team has. So, yes, it's got the star power. Yes, it will be highly competitive. But I'm not ready to say that Team USA is just going to run away with the gold medal. I mean, they've got to prove that they can come together. They can take it seriously. And you know, that usually happens in the Olympics. It doesn't happen in the World Championships. But they were pushed in the World Championships last time around. So it'll be interesting to see also who that 12th spot goes to.
Dick, let's head to the NBA playoffs as a preview. What matchups are you looking forward to?
Well, the number one matchup, let's just start with tonight, guys. Let's start in 3 hours. The Lakers and the Pelicans rematch of a game of a couple of days ago where the Lakers knocked the Pelicans into the play-in game, just blew them out, 124-110, I believe the final score was. The Lakers appear poised going into this playoffs. I've already bet on them to win tonight. The spread was surprisingly close, in my opinion. It was just a point and a half. And I just think the Lakers are well suited to beat the Pelicans. The only question out there, not from me, but from national guys, is will the Lakers try to blow this game so they don't get the 7 seed, so they don't have to face Denver in the first round? Because Denver is the number 2, they would play the number 7. My take is simply this. I think you want Denver early in the playoffs. If you are going to get Denver and you're the Lakers, you're going to get them early in the playoffs when you are fresh and rested. And first round games are further spaced apart than they are later in the playoffs. So you're going to get a fresher LeBron, a fresher AD against Denver if you face them in the first round than if you were to face them in the conference finals.
I just cannot believe that argument. So tank this game to go into a one-off game, potentially against Steph and the Warriors, who can turn it on. On any given night. How is that even a suggestion? I just can't believe
guys,
that.
I heard it from two separate people that make a lot more money than I do in the national media, one being Stephen A. Smith, who is probably the most popular American. He was just throwing it out there. And then Mike Greenberg on ESPN today was thinking it was a good idea. I just think that the rest that the Lakers would get. Yes, Denver is better than Oklahoma City. Yes, all things being equal, I would rather face a young Oklahoma City team in the first round than Denver in the first round. But if my objective is to go to the finals, which you're going to have to beat Denver at some point to go to the finals, if that's my objective, which is clearly LeBron and AD's objective, then get Denver early when you are fresher, not later on down the road when you've already played 15 to 20 playoff games.
Naturally, the 4-5 and the 3-6 series in both conferences are already decided. And interested in your thoughts. Well, firstly, on the Milwaukee Bucks against the Indiana Pacers. And in the series winner market, this is very, very close. Milwaukee, $1.85 with us at tab. Indiana, $1.95. And I guess this is all due to the fact that Giannis is missing the start of the series, isn't he, Dick?
He is. He's got that that bad leg that's just a strain, which is good news, but he's going to miss the beginning of this series. Indiana, guys, looks really, really good. And Milwaukee just hasn't been the same since really midseason, since Doc Rivers took over. It just doesn't seem like a cohesive unit. Indiana is an outstanding offensive team. I mean, this is a team that can just absolutely light it up, led by Tyrese Halliburton is absolutely fantastic. 20 points a game, 11 assists per game. They're a team that's dangerous, and I'm kind of leaning Indiana in that series. I think it's about it's about even money as far as who you're going to play. I just don't think I don't think Milwaukee can handle long term in this playoffs because they've got some offensive issues. They like to slow it down. Indiana likes to speed it up. And if you don't have Giannis in there for a couple of games, I think Indiana jumps on him early, and I think they probably hold them off in this series.
The two series in the West that we know about as well, Dallas $1.80, Clippers $2, and Phoenix $1.85, Minnesota $1.95. Who do you think goes through to the conference semifinals out of those two series?
Yeah, it's funny. I like both Minnesota and Phoenix, but they're playing each other. I don't like Dallas or the Clippers, and they're playing each other. So I wish it was a team that I liked against the team that I didn't like. So that makes it difficult for me. I'm laying off both series. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. I think the intrigue about that Phoenix series is you've got the veteran Phoenix team against the young Minnesota team. I sat down and watched a veteran Phoenix team edge out a young, exciting Sacramento team just a couple of nights ago in Sacramento, winning by 1 point. That was an outstanding basketball game. Phoenix played well. There are just so many great teams in the Western Conference, guys. If you look at these Western Conference standings, just 5 years ago, 46 wins would have put you at the 5 seed in the Western Conference. This year, Golden State has 46 wins, and they're in the 10 seed in the Western Conference. That is how great this conference is. This is probably the deepest Western Conference maybe I have ever seen. Certainly I've seen in the Steph LeBron era. There's no question about that. And you look back at the Eastern Conference, you got two teams making the playoffs, the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks, winning 39 and 36 games. Atlanta's 10 games under 500, and they're playing in the same seed, same game that Golden State is, with a 10 games better record than Atlanta.
Amazing. We've got a few of our listeners texting in, Dick. Sven from Greenpoint wants to know, what's your biggest round one draft surprise for next week?
Ooh, biggest round one draft surprise. You know, Michael Penix is a guy that originally was being talked about going in the second round. I think general managers realize what we realize here in Seattle is that Michael Penix is a lock to be a top half quarterback in this NFL, maybe even a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And if you can secure yourself a safe top 10, top 12 quarterback in the NFL and get it with mid to late first round value, I think you have to do that. So I see Las Vegas Raiders taking Michael Penix much earlier than most people originally expected Penix would go, which is early first round or early second round.
While we're on quarterbacks in the draft, Graham at Currajong says, morning, Dick. It looks like the Minnesota Vikings are going to have to trade up. Do they select Drake May or JJ McCarthy? And what do the Giants do? Because Daniel Jones, well, in Graham's word, sucks.
Yeah, well, he's right about that, and he's also coming off an injury as well. So not only does he suck, he's also injured. But the Giants did report today that he should be ready for camp, so he should have no problem. I'm not a big JJ McCarthy guy. I've seen him much more than I have Drake May. I think JJ McCarthy is an excellent athlete. I think he's an excellent leader. He's kind of like Bo Nix in my mind. I don't think either one of them are great downfield passers. If they can get into an offense which is a little more Kansas City-like, where it's kind of move the quarterback around, dump it off to tight ends, throw it short, and let the wide receivers do damage after that, I think they can succeed in this league. If they want to go to a drop-back style and throw it downfield, which is much more Michael Penix's MO, that's not going to work in my mind for J.J. McCarthy. Drake May is much more like Michael Penix. He's got a bigger arm. He can throw downfield with a little more accuracy. I'm not a huge fan of either one of them, guys. I like Caleb Williams a lot. I think he can be special. There are a few red flags there. Jaden Daniels is a tremendous athlete, but there's some upside there for him to be kind of a Jalen Hurts-esque type of quarterback, just a little bit smaller, and then Michael Penix. But other than that, guys, I don't think there's a sure thing in this NFL draft at the quarterback position.
Just before you go, heading into the NHL playoffs, is there a team we should be betting on? 7-1 the field, ooh. So it's very, very tight.
It is very, very tight. I mean, my Kraken have had a massively disappointing season. Boston, remember, Boston's the team last year that was the number one seed, and they ended up losing in the first round. So I think they're going to be hungry this year after that failure of last year. They were the laughing stock of the NHL. I believe they had the best record ever to lose in the first round of the NHL playoffs. So I think a motivated Boston team is going to be tough to beat.
Okay, they're 10-1, $11 with Tab. Mate, you have a great day. Thanks as always.
Thanks, boys. See ya.
Well, high drama here in the Champions League, and it is a penalty, and Kylian Mbappe stepping up for PSG, who lead 2-1 on the day, so it is 4-4 on aggregate. We're an hour into this second leg of their Champions League quarterfinal, Barcelona and PSG, and here is the best player in the world, Mossy, about to step up. Looked a penalty too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think there was contact with the foot before the ball, so I think it's a fair enough decision, but how this game has turned with Barcelona going down to 10 men and Mbappe with a chance right now as we speak to put PSG 2 goals to the good, 3-1.
And ahead on aggregate, most importantly. Mm. And I mean, $1.20? $1.10? What have you got him at? I'll put the mock on him, don't worry.
Oh, and it's a great pen.
Keeper went the right way, but just too much power up into the top left corner. So Mbappe scores. and PSG go ahead 5-4 on aggregate. There's still half an hour plus stoppage time remaining, but a classic tie there this morning at the Nou Camp. Now, heading towards the weekend, and well, this game tomorrow night in particular, Adam, going to be an absolute cracker between the Roosters and the Melbourne Storm. And the market with Tab, well, who do you think's favourite for this one?
Oh, I looked at it yesterday, Middo. I think they're pretty much flip a coin, isn't it?
It is. Well, just now, the Storm $1.85, the Roosters $1.95. James Tedesco, of course, back for the Roosters. Nelson Asofa Solomona back for the Melbourne Storm as well. Sam Walker in the reserves. Still not back, I guess, from that head knock. Mm-hmm. And so Keary and Connor Watson again have, well, the 6 and 7 on their backs at this stage heading into the game.
Yeah, I can't quite get a read on the Roosters, Middo, so far this year. They've been a little bit hot and cold. Like, their best footy has been great. I thought they were fantastic in Las Vegas. Obviously, going back to round one, they absolutely dismantled South on that Friday night at Allianz Stadium. But there's been a couple of other really sloppy performances, if I can put it in those terms. Is that fair to say?
Well, the Dogs, they didn't turn up for the first 35 minutes.
Well, exactly. Like, that performance in the second half was unbelievable, with only 12 men, then down to 11 men for the last 7 minutes.
It took that for them to wake up.
Exactly. The reality is, in the first 35 minutes, they were awful. Mm. So I can't quite get a read on the Roosters at the moment, Middo, if I'm being fair. And I think Melbourne are doing just enough to win games without being fantastic. A couple of narrow wins against Brisbane and the Bulldogs in the last couple of weeks at home. So I think the market, to be fair, has probably got it right. I don't really know which way to lean in that game.
And we're talking Origin earlier, and the talk's only going to ramp up now, particularly as we've heard Michael Maguire mention some names yesterday, which he was obviously asked about, but he mentioned Ryan Pappenhausen. With Teddy back for the Roosters, if Pappenhausen obviously has a blinder here, his name will be propelled into calculations for game one for New South Wales.
You could pick Tedesco, obviously, as the incumbent, and I think will be there for Origin 1. You could pick Dylan Edwards. You could pick Tom Trbojevic at fullback. You could pick Ryan Pappenhausen at fullback.
Or off the bench.
Like, how many different fullback options do New South Wales have? They've got heaps. But I think Teddy, at this stage, Middo, from what we've seen so far in the first few weeks of the season, I think he's done enough to suggest he's back to somewhere near his best.
Oh, he's been great.
Yeah, and he should be the front runner.
Yeah, that's right. Back from that tackling, putting his head in front of Viliami Kikau's knee did help stop that try in the moment, but she paid a bit of a price, didn't he, there, Teddy, for that, putting his body on the line. At the moment, who do you think's got the inside running for the Blues hooking jersey?
Oh, good question. That's a really good question at the
moment.
Poor
old Cookie's been dropped. Scored a try playing in the New South Wales Cup. He's the incumbent. Reece Robson, we saw him play last year.
Yep. I personally, if you ask me for my opinion, Middo, I'd be going with Appy Coruscant as it stands right now. I've got such a huge opinion of Appy. I think he's a fantastic player. His deception around the ruck is just second to none, in my opinion. But what I will say is that I think Wade Egan and Reece Robson are putting some serious pressure on. So that's going to be one of Madge's bigger calls to make, is going to be the hooking position and probably 5/8 as well.
Seems Blake Brayley's also in that.
Yeah, he's been a very underrated player for a number of years, and he's so durable as well, Blake. He just rarely misses a game at all for the Sharks. He just fronts up week after week. So there's options there, but if you're asking me, I'm probably just going for Coruscant at the moment.
On the text line, Kikau, the way he's playing, think the Dogs are the better of the round. No name to that one, but $2, the Dogs, playing Newcastle $1.80. This game is the 2 o'clock game. The 2 o'clock game's back on Sunday afternoon. And I see Blake Taff's on the bench, so Connor Tracy's still there at fullback for the Dogs.
Yeah, he was great, Connor, last week, wasn't he, when Blake Taff missed that game through the concussion stand-down protocols, obviously. So isn't it funny, Middo? Like, the Bulldogs seem to be using so many different players in backline positions, but the only guy who's not moving is Stephen Crichton. He hasn't played fullback yet. he's just stayed at centre so far. I mean, most people thought he'd probably get first crack at the number one jersey. So, yeah, Cameron Serrato's still trying to work out, obviously, his best team, but they're a significantly improved team from last year, the Bulldogs, aren't they? And that's an important game on the weekend, because both teams have only got 2 wins, I think, so far this year, Bulldogs and the Knights. You lose that game, you're starting to probably lose touch a little bit with the pack sort of around that mid-table.
Where is this now? It's been pointed out to me, Mossy. It's at the old Olympic Stadium in Barcelona. Of course, the new camp's being redeveloped. So the PSG game isn't being played at the new camp because it's being redeveloped. Thank you, Noonie Sunny, sending that one through. So it's at the Barcelona Olympic Stadium. Apologies. The Champions League just keeps delivering. What a competition it is. And this morning, we've got goals galore. We've got aggregate situations changing. We'll start with Barcelona PSG on the day. And Barcelona down to 10 men, by the way, just before the half-hour mark. PSG leading 3-1 on the day. So what's that on aggregate now, Mossy? That is 5-4 PSG on aggregate. And there's 15 minutes plus stoppage time to go. And the other tie, these are quarterfinal second legs, by the way. Atletico Madrid won the first leg 2-1 against Borussia Dortmund. And Dortmund, they led 2-0 on the day. Then it was 2-2. And now Dortmund are now up 4-2. So that makes it, 5-4 on aggregate?
5-4 to Dortmund. Yep. Incredible scenes.
10 minutes ago.
Back at 2-2, you thought Atletico Madrid had the momentum. They were going to go ahead. They were going to go on with it. And then Dortmund have just found a way. 71st and 74th minutes. Marcel Sabitzer in the 74th minute. Remarkable.
And, of course, we've got two ties coming up tomorrow morning. Quarterfinal second legs as well. And the markets with tab for those. So Bayern Munich up against Arsenal. And from the first leg, it was 2-2. So Arsenal going to Germany. Bayern at $2.25 with tab. Arsenal $2.90. The draw is $3.60. And Manchester City up against Real Madrid. And from the first leg, it was 3-3. City at home, though, pretty short. $1.62. Real Madrid, $4.75, and the draw is $4.25. Of course, these games on Stan. I did start watching the Manchester City Netflix thing the other day. I don't know why I decided to go and put myself through it, but it's really well shot.
Behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic series. Actually, the whole series is. Mm-hmm. Not just Manchester City, there's some other clubs on it as well. But, really good stuff.
And there are a few new episodes of the old, the Sunderland one. What's it called?
Sunderland Till I Die.
Gee, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I actually like that more.
Yeah. You got to jump on, mate, jump on YouTube and watch The Code, Life with the Mariners. It was shot in 2013. Manchester City to Tugra. But, mate, it was a fantastic series. And I tell you what. Mate, when a producer walks through your door at the start of the season and goes, can I just follow you guys for the season? And we're like, this could be an absolute disaster. And then you go all the way and win the grand final and everything's like recorded for the season. It's a wonderful keepsake.
Yeah.
Probably not on the shelf next to Pep Guardiola, but somewhere there or there.
Well, did the producer follow you to Mad Monday, Mossy? Did they go to Mad Monday and just keep it going for another couple of days of the celebrations, or was it just grand final and done?
No, they were there for the ticker tape parade.
Yeah.
And there were some celebrations around that. But okay. Don't forget, you're not supposed to know this, but we won the grand final on a Saturday night in Sydney, and we had to fly out at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning for the Champions League.
Wow, I do remember.
So we didn't really get a chance to celebrate. Although to be fair, we did have a few beers that night. But yeah, and then we had to go to Korea, and we had to win to qualify for the second round, which we did.
Wow.
And Arnie literally said to the players when we landed, went to a pitch for a walk to stretch the legs. He said, right, put your hands up if you're right to play tomorrow night. That's how we picked the team.
Did everyone put their hands up?
Most players. I think Patrick Svansvike maybe might not have, but we beat Suwon Blue Wings 1-0.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. I find those sports documentaries fascinating a lot of the time, but the thing I really want to see is, I remember watching one with Collingwood a few years ago, and when Nathan Buckley was the coach, and he actually had the cameras in his office when he was telling guys they were being delisted, saying, I'm really sorry, but there's no contract for you next year. Thank you for everything you've done for this club, but we're moving in a different direction. And the emotion and the tension in the air when you have a camera in his office like that is incredible. As a viewer, I know it's a bit voyeuristic, but that's what I want to see.
Yeah,
I want to see those really hard conversations
times, yeah.
and how that sort of goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because another episode of that series is Mourinho. And you see behind the scenes with Mourinho, I can't remember where he was. Anyway, can't remember the club. But, yeah, like if you're going to do it, you've got to do it properly. For yep. the, with the viewer in mind, you've got to take them where fans don't go. And if it's done well, it's good viewing. Mm.
Certainly is. Was that Ben Coonan? Did he produce that?
No. Ben Coonan's an excellent producer, but no, it was Onion Productions.
Okay. No, he and Rich Bayliss did September 16 yes. about the night we beat Uruguay.
Correct.
Famously in 2000 and... What year was it? 2004?
Five. Still the best sporting event I've ever been to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not the only person I've heard say that.
Like, incredible.
Mm. Yeah.
I was living in London at the time. Yeah, incredible. Anyway, we've got Macca. Hello, Macca. How are you, mate?
Not bad, guys. Yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Hey, what have you got for us?
I just want to talk about football here now. You've got a football expert on the panel now, which is great. I just want to ask you guys, do you know much about the B-League? But what I've been told is that the B-League, when they start next year, that they have to have two players under the age of 19, either in the lineup or in their match sheet. And three players in the lineup or in the match sheet for under the age of 23. Can you confirm that? Is that true?
I can't confirm it, Macca. I'm not denying it either. But, I think there's... From what I know, there's still a fair way to go with regards to clubs proving that they can be viable in the B-League and the way they're going to set it up before it gets down to the technical aspects of team sheets on match day, but you may have it. Well, I think you've got a very good point regardless, because if we're serious about a B league, I think there has to be a really firm black and white aspect to developing young players.
I mean, it's a good league, don't get me wrong. I personally can be good for the young, especially the young guys, because like you say, we don't have enough A league clubs in there. Like my son at the moment is playing for MacArthur Bulls, and he's doing great, you know, at the moment, you know, 17 years old. Playing in the under-20s, which is doing great, and hope you go to the next step, you know, go to a state league first grade, then maybe one day be good enough to play in the A-League, you know. But I think that B-League, what they're having now, this is going to be great for a lot of young people, but how they're going to do it, would it be long-term survive? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right, and that's a big question, but it's there to bridge the gap between NPL and A-League, and done properly, it can certainly fill that void.
Good on you, Macca. Thank you. A question for Mossy from Shire As. Who is Mossy's team in the NRL? And if Central Coast play Sydney FC in the grand final, where does his loyalties lay?
Oh, Shire As. Jeez, you're hitting me with the tough questions. We're not even at 7 a.m. Well, the first one's easy. That's Manly, the Seagulls. Born and bred, well, not born on the Northern Beaches, but came here when I was 3 months old, so that almost qualifies me.
It's close enough to Paul.
Yeah, so the Seagulls. And Penrith have an emotional tie because good mates with Ivan and the Cleary family, so always follow them as my second team. But, gee, if the Mariners and Sydney played in the grand final, that's a really, really tough one. Can I say, just take it to penalties and...
just make it even more heartbreaking for the loser.
That's a tough one. I would probably have to say Sydney FC, to be honest. I do love the Mariners. I fell out with the owner up there, so it's nothing against the club. It was just a personal thing with one individual. But ultimately, Sydney FC was just a wonderful experience, and I'm still very much in touch with people at the club, so I'd probably have to go with Sydney.
Dom's on the line. G'day, Dom.
G'day, Jared. How are you, mate?
Yeah, really well, thanks, mate. What have you got for us?
Hey, mate, so I spoke to you at the Magic Millions Calcutta. I'm not sure if you remember, but I was telling you about a friend of my son's that's at the NFL.
Paddy Murtagh, yes.
Paddy Murtagh,
that's
yeah.
right. I do remember. In fact, I sent a message to our fearless producer yesterday saying we've got to get him on the show.
So mate, he's just signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes, I did see.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it to your attention if you didn't know, mate.
No, I saw the news yesterday, absolutely. And he's gone through some sort of international pathway, hasn't he? And he played for the Gold
that's
Coast
right,
Suns.
Yep,
and now he's got a chance to make it to the big time in the NFL. And I think he's a tight end, isn't he? That's where he's been training at.
Yeah, gone over as a tight end, not a punter, like everyone would think he'd be a punter. But, yeah, mate, he's trying out for the tight end position, and he's made the 73-man pre-season roster, so he's just signed a contract for that. So, yeah, mate, he's done well.
Yep. No, it's a great story, and we know how idiosyncratic and unique that game is to and for an Aussie to go over there, not just as a punter. And we're seeing with Jordan Mailata, and his story is unbelievable, probably underrated, really, in Australian sport, to go over and play left tackle in the NFL, one of the most technically difficult and physically difficult positions as well. And, you know, a lot of pressure on left tackles to protect the quarterback. And now we'll keep an eye on Paddy Murtagh, former Gold Coast Sun, to see if he can make the big time. And he's got a chance over there with the Jaguars. So good on you, Dom. Thanks for alerting us to it.
Cheers, mate.
No, thank you. Appreciate the call.
Quick one. All or Nothing is the series on Netflix. And they've gone to a few clubs with it, but Jose Mourinho was at Spurs at the time. Thank you to one of our listeners who texted in just to rectify that one. But yeah, fantastic series if you want to get behind the scenes at these big EPL clubs.
And apparently on the text line, a Kobe one is in the works, similar to the Jordan doco, which would be very, very interesting as well. The Jordan one was very much, I guess, Bulls one as well, though. The Last Dance, but gee, we enjoyed that because it was during COVID and we had nothing else to watch. Still was a great doco though, wasn't it? Mossy, how did Liverpool lose to Palace? Renz and Alice Springs. G'day, Renz and Alice Springs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, Mossy, where are the answers? What have you got for us?
Well, put your chances away. Is that too simplistic? Well, goals win games, and we had a plethora of chances, like good chances, and we didn't put them away, and Palace hit us with the sucker punch. So, yeah, as disappointed as you are, Renz, by the sound of your text.
There was a Kelly Slater text here I wanted to mention as well. Mido, late hero for the week. Kelly Slater surfed his last heat on the world tour in a full-time jersey. 52 years old, the true GOAT. 11 world titles, 55 event wins. First title at 20 years old in 1992. Last at 39 in 2011, won the Pipe Masters at 50 years of age. He's crossed generations and progressed the sport to new heights. No name to that one, but really well said. I did see this yesterday that he was beaten in the round of 32 at the Margaret River Pro. He needed to win the event in WA to survive the mid-season cut. He was chaired off the beach. He says he's put in for a wild card in Fiji. But the end is close for Kelly Slater. But it's spanning generations, and that is really well said, because he, like, 1992, wasn't he? He won his first world title.
Yeah. Incredible. He's still going. The ocean slows down when Kelly Slater stands up on a board. It's remarkable. I remember talking to Ken Bradshaw. Do you remember Ken Bradshaw, the big wave rider who dated Lane Beachley for a while? And I had a coffee with him in Manly years and years ago. And he said the best big wave surfers and surfers, he said, they've got this ability to slow the ocean down. And that quote has always stuck with me.
Well, he's soon to be heading to his second Olympics, turns 22 next month. Aussie diver and TikTok sensation. He's got nearly as many followers as Mossy, 1.9 million. Joining us is Sam Fricker. Morning, Sam. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. I might have the followers, but I don't know if I'm as cool as Mossy.
Not many are. Sam, 100 days from the opening ceremony there in Paris. How are you feeling about competing there at this point in your preparation?
Yeah, I'm really excited to... Well, we got to make the team in June, but I'm really excited because Tokyo was all locked down. They had the place really chained up, and I think this is going to be so open. I think people want a really open event. And I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I'm looking forward to hopefully dipping out of the village if you can. And I heard the opening ceremony, they're going to float us down the river. So I think that'd make a damn good video.
How good.
It'd be unique.
That'd be fantastic. Listen, Sam, great to talk to you again, mate. Heading into an Olympic year, what lessons have you learnt? What are you going to bring forward from Tokyo?
My first Olympics was my first major event ever. So I really felt like I was in the deep end. After that, I got to do a few more world championships and a Commonwealth Games. And I've got a lot more experience under my belt, and I just feel a little bit more comfortable being in those situations, because it was my first major event, so I really did feel kind of out of place in the deep end. So I feel a little bit better in my skin, a little bit better about my diving. I'm going in there just focusing on what I would have to do.
Sam, a few months till this, obviously the Olympics, and the team will be named in the not-too-distant future. What does the next few months look like for you in terms of competition and preparation, trying to get ready for Paris?
So we fly out to America and Canada on Monday. We got a competition in both America and Canada, and then we come back for 4 weeks, and then we head straight over to Adelaide for the Olympic trials. So these ones overseas, they're important to dive well, but they don't particularly matter. What really matters is those Olympic trials. So at the moment, we're working on consistency. I've got my dives up on 10-meter, and I just try and nail them every time as often as possible, as sharp as we can. So it's just fine-tuning those small things every day, those small, small details.
So best case in the Games in Paris, are you competing in the 10-meter platform and the synchronized events as well? What are you looking, what is the events you want to be there competing in Paris exactly?
The men's 10-meter platform, I was able to secure a spot in December, so I'll definitely be trying to make it for that event. The synchro event, Australia doesn't currently have a spot for that,
okay.
So I'll just put all my focus into the men's 10-meter. But that synchro event, I think in maybe the next Olympics or the one after, I think we could possibly win a medal in that event, because synchro is such a good opportunity, and we're not too bad at it.
Now, I'm curious about your pre-dive routine and what it entails. Say, give us an idea of, say, the preceding, I don't know, 5-6 minutes before you dive.
Mine's quite unique, because I like to train fast. So in a competition, I like to put that kind of spin on it. So I tend to wait a little bit longer, so then I'm in a bit of a rush. Then I quickly get wet, get my heart going, because I'm in a bit of a rush, go and chat to my coach, quickly go up the stairs, and then I'm on the end of the platform. They announce your name. They tell you what dive you're doing, because you've entered it before. And then I just got my count. Take a breath. 1, 2, 3, go. And I send it. I've got some keywords each dive. So, for example, my reverse 3.5, I'll just think quick jump, look at the water. Then I just count. 1, 2, 3. Look at your toes and look back for the water. So that's typically what I'll do for all 6 dives. And we've got now all 18 to try and make the Olympics.
That's amazing. Our listeners have just been treated there, by the way. They've been taken inside the mind of an elite Olympic diver. That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Sam.
Of course.
What about you've been busy out of the pool as well? Let's jump out of the deep end. And by the way, your puns weren't lost on me about being in the deep being in the deep end. Out of the pool, you've been interviewing some notable people. What's the quirkiest interview you've done? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I started my podcast because I know diving's not going to last forever, and I wanted to learn from these really successful people. So we've spoken with Dick Smith, we spoke with Valerie Taylor, who her story was quite interesting. I just don't know who gets up in the morning and decides they're going to go and film sharks and jump in with a camera. And that's what she did. She pioneered underwater photography for sharks. She protected the great white shark. And I feel like that's something that's so out of the realm of, I suppose, what I would do on a daily basis. I was fascinated by that. But we also spoke to Scott Morrison about his time as Prime Minister and different things that he'd done. And it's a great opportunity for me to learn and then share those stories with my followers.
Let's give it a plug, the podcast. So it's called, is it Diving Deep?
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Diving Deep with Sam Fricker.
Okay.
Maybe we have to get some of you boys on.
Well, don't want to turn your listeners off.
You're pretty boring guests.
Okay, Diving Deep with Sam Fricker.
Sam, you spoke about fear with the lady you spoke about who gets in with great white sharks and films them every morning. I'm interested into your mindset standing on a platform 10 metres above water. When you first started, is there fear that comes into your mindset and your thinking when you're standing that high above the water, thinking I've got to execute a dive here?
There certainly is. And not even just when we were young, but I think every diver has their own fears. And you're always, I suppose, more nervous. You're not scared in terms of I don't know completely what I'm doing. You're nervous because you know what you've got to do. And then you've just got to concentrate to do it right. Because a small different movement, you can get hurt. But when you
we don't train 10 meter all year. So a lot of the time, if we don't have to compete, we'll train the lower down platforms to fine tune our basics. So when we take those back up to 10 meter and start doing our harder dives, that's typically the scariest part of the year because you hadn't done it for a few months and you're moving everything back up there. And for the first month, you're doing all your dives. They're quite nerve-wracking again. And then you've got to do them every week, multiple times a week as you get more used to it. And then you get more comfortable and slowly that fear or that nervousness drowns out. So then by the time you get to competition, you typically it's like walking in the park and it feels much more simple, easy, and you're not too concerned. But even when you're just building it back up to 10 meter, which we do a few times a year, that is quite a nervous time.
How important has the New South Wales Institute of Sport been for you as well, Sam?
Answers took me under their wing. I grew up in Newcastle and moved to Sydney to try and make the Olympics. And Answers was the program that I came into. Those coaches shaped me as an individual, just watching them take people from junior athletes to Olympic athletes. And I was just really glad to. Well, I suppose we work hard, but really proud to be a part of it. And glad that I could take down that journey with them. They've been a constant support inside and outside the pool, and my coaches are always there. It's an individual sport, but it's really not because you've got that massive team around you to support you. So Answers have always looked after me, and I hope I can do the same for them.
Well, mate, it's great to speak to you and check in again, and can't wait to see you. Hopefully, all fingers crossed, everything goes well, and you're there on the plane to Paris later this year, not too far away.
See you soon. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.